simply scampered away, ego already too beaten down to be bothered by Shan's insults. This night, however, she found herself wishing for a way to strike back. "Calm yourself. This is a good thing. You've become a pawn in Great House plans. Most lesser nobility probably dream of such an opportunity." She sighed, retreating toward the now empty table she had shared with Mylan. The ball this evening was being held at the marvelous Keep Hasting. Its tall, round central keep was attended by 6 auxiliary towers, each set off from the main building a short distance and connected to it by wall-top walkways. All 7 towers were set with winding, curving patterns of stained glass. The ballroom was at the top of the wide central tower. Fortunately, a system of ska-powered pulley platforms kept noble guests from having to walk all the way to the top. The ballroom itself wasn't as spectacular as some Vin had visited, just a squarish chamber with vaulted ceilings and colored glass running around the perimeter. "Funny how easily one can become jaded," Vin thought. "Perhaps that's how the noblemen can do such terrible things. They've been killing for so long that it doesn't unsettle them anymore." She asked a servant to go fetch Sazed, then sat down to rest her feet. "I wish Kelsier would hurry up and get back," she thought. The crew, Vin included, seemed less motivated without him around. It wasn't that she didn't want to work. Kelsier's snappy wit and optimism just helped keep her moving. Vin looked up idly, and her eyes caught sight of Elland Venture standing just a short distance away, chatting with a small group of young noblemen. She froze. Part of her, the Vin part, wanted to scurry away and hide. She'd fit beneath a table, dress and all. Oddly, however, she found her valet side stronger. "I have to talk to him," she thought. "Not because of Shan, but because I have to find out the truth. Doxson was exaggerating. He had to be." When had she grown so confrontational? Even as she stood, Vin was amazed at her firm resolve. She crossed the ballroom, checking her black dress briefly as she walked. One of Ellen's companions tapped him on the shoulder, nodding toward Vin. Ellen turned, and the other 2 men withdrew. "Why, Valette," he said as she paused in front of him. "I arrived late. I didn't even know you were here."
"Liar. Of course you knew. Valette wouldn't miss the Hasting ball."
How to broach it? How to ask?
"You've been avoiding me," she said.
"No, I wouldn't say that. I've just been busy. House issues, you know. Besides, I warned you that I was rude, and..." He trailed off. "Valette? Is everything all right?" Vin realized she was sniffling slightly, and she felt a tear on her cheek.
"Idiot," she thought,
dabbing her eyes with Lestibornis's handkerchief.
"You'll ruin your makeup."
"Valette, you're shaking," Ellen said with concern. "Here, let's go to the balcony and get you some fresh air." She led him lead her away from the sounds of music and chattering people, and they stepped into the quiet, dark air. The balcony, one of many jutting from the top of the central Hasting Tower, was empty. A single stone lantern stood as part of the railing, and some tastefully placed plants lined the corners. Mist floated in the air, prevalent as ever, though the balcony was close enough to the keep's warmth that the mist was weak. Ellen didn't pay any attention to it. He, like most noblemen, considered fear of the mist to be a foolish ska superstition, which Vin supposed was right. "Now what is this about?" Ellen asked. "I'll admit I have been ignoring you. I'm sorry. You didn't deserve it, I just..." "Well, it seemed like you were fitting in so well that you didn't need a troublemaker like me being..."
"Have you ever slept with a ska woman?" Vin asked.
Ellen paused, taken aback. "Is that what this is all about?
Who told you this?"
"Have you?" Vin demanded. Ellen paused.
"Lord Ruler, it's true."
"Sit down," Ellen said, fetching her a chair.
"It's true, isn't it?"
Vin said, sitting.
"You've done it. He was right. You're all monsters.
I... He laid a hand on Vin's arm, but she pulled it away, only to feel a teardrop drip down her face and stain her dress. She reached up, wiping her eyes, the handkerchief coming back colored with makeup.
It happened when I was 13, Ellen said quietly. My father thought it was time that I became a man. I didn't even know they were going to kill the girl afterward, Valette. Honestly, I didn't.
And after that, she demanded, growing angry. How many girls have you murdered, Ellen Venture?
None. Never again, Valette. Not after I found out what had happened that first time.
You expect me to believe you?
I don't know, Ellen said. Look, I know that it's fashionable for the women of court to label all men brutes. But you have to believe me. We're not all like that.
I was told that you are, Vin said.
By whom? Country nobility? Valette, they don't know us. They're jealous because we control most of the canal systems, and they might just have a right to be. Their envy doesn't make us terrible people, however.
What percentage? Vin asked. How many noblemen do these things?
Maybe a third, Ellen said. I'm not sure. They aren't the types I spend my time with. She wanted to believe him, and that desire should have made her more skeptical. But looking into those eyes, eyes she had always found so honest, she found herself swayed. For the first time she could remember, she completely pushed aside Reen's whispers and simply believed.
A third, she whispered.
So many. But that's better than all of them. She reached up to dab her eyes, and Ellen eyed her handkerchief. Who gave you that? He asked curiously.
A suitor, Vin said.
Is he the one who's been telling you these things about me?
No, that was another, Vin said.
He said that all noblemen, or rather all Luthadel noblemen, were terrible people. He said that court women don't even consider it cheating when their men sleep with ska whores. Ellen snorted. Your informant doesn't know women very well, then. I dare you to find me one lady who isn't bothered when her husband dallies with another, ska or noble. Vin nodded, taking a deep breath, calming herself. She felt ridiculous. But she also felt at peace. Ellen knelt beside her chair, still obviously concerned.
So, she said, your father is one of the third?
Ellen flushed in the wan light, looking down. He likes all kinds of mistresses. Ska, noble, it doesn't matter to him. I still think about that night, Valette. I wish... I don't know.
It wasn't your fault, Ellen, she said. You were just a 13-year-old boy who was doing what his father told him.
Ellen looked away, but she had already seen the anger and guilt in his eyes. Someone needs to stop these kinds of things from happening, he said quietly, and Vin was struck by the intensity in his voice.
This is a man who cares, she thought. A man like Kelsier, or like Doxson. A good man. Why can't they see that?
Finally, Ellen sighed, standing and pulling over a chair for himself. He sat down, elbow resting against the railing, running his hand through his messy hair. Well, he noted, you probably aren't the first lady I've made cry at a ball, but you are the first one I've made cry that I sincerely care about. My gentlemanly prowess has reached new depths. Vin smiled.
It's not you, she said, leaning back. It's just been a very draining few months. When I found out about these things, I just couldn't handle it all.
The corruption in Luthadel needs to be dealt with, Ellen said. The Lord Ruler doesn't even see it. He doesn't want to. Vin nodded, then she eyed Ellen.
Why exactly have you been avoiding me lately, anyway?
Ellen flushed again. I just figured you had enough new friends to keep you occupied.
What is that supposed to mean? I don't like a lot of people you've been spending your time with, Valette, Ellen said. You've managed to fit very well into Lúthedain society, and I generally find that playing politics changes people. That's easy to say, Vin snapped, especially when you're at the very top of the political structure. You can afford to ignore politics. Some of us aren't so fortunate. I suppose. Besides, Vin said, you play politics just as well as the rest. Or are you going to try and tell me that your initial interest in me wasn't sparked by a desire to spite your father? Ellen held up his hands. All right, consider me suitably chastised. I was a fool and a twit. It runs in the family. Vin sighed, sitting back and feeling the cool whisper of the mists on her tear-wetted cheeks. Ellen wasn't a monster. She believed him on that count. Perhaps she was a fool, but Kelsier was having an effect on her. She was beginning to trust those around her, and there was no one she wanted to let herself trust more than Ellen Venture. And, when it wasn't connected directly to Ellen, she found the horrors of the noble-Ska relationship easier to deal with. Even if a third of the noblemen were murdering Ska women, something was probably salvageable of the society. The nobility wouldn't have to be purged. That was their tactic. Vin would have to make certain that sort of thing didn't happen, no matter what bloodline one had. Lord Ruler, she thought, I'm starting to think like the others. It's almost like I think that we can change things. She glanced across at Ellen, who sat with his back to the curling mists beyond. He looked morose. I brought out bad memories, Vin thought guiltily. No wonder he hates his father so much. She longed to do something to make him feel better. Ellen, she said, drawing his attention. They're just like us. He paused. What? The plantation, Ska, Vin said. You asked me about them once. I was afraid, so I acted like a proper noblewoman. But you seemed disappointed when I didn't have more to say. He leaned forward. So you did spend time with the Ska? Vin nodded. A lot of time. Too much, if you ask my family. That might be why they sent me out here. I knew some of the Ska very well. One older man in particular. He lost someone, a woman he loved, to a nobleman who wanted a pretty thing for the evening's entertainment. At your plantation? Vin shook her head quickly. He ran away and came to my father's lands. And you hid him? Ellen asked with surprise. Runaway Scar supposed to be executed. I kept his secret, Vin said. I didn't know him for very long, but... Well, I can promise you this, Ellen. His love was as strong as that of any nobleman. Stronger than most of them here in Lúthedain, certainly. And intelligence? Ellen asked eagerly. Did they seem... slow? Of course not, Vin snapped. I should think, Ellen Venture, that I knew several Ska more clever than yourself. They may not have education, but they're still intelligent. And they're angry. Angry? He asked. Some of them, Vin said. About the way they're treated. They know, then. About the disparities between us and them. How could they not? Vin said, reaching up to wipe her nose with the handkerchief. She paused, however, noting just how much makeup she had rubbed across it. Here, Ellen said, handing her his own handkerchief. Tell me more. How do you know these things?
They told me, Vin said. They trusted me. I know that they're angry because they would complain about their lives. I know they're intelligent because of the things they keep hidden from the nobility.
Like what?
Like the underground movement network, Vin said. Ska help runaways travel the canals from plantation to plantation. The noblemen don't notice because they never pay attention to Ska faces.
Interesting.
Plus, Vin said, there are the thieving crews. I figure that those Ska must be fairly clever if they're able to hide from the obligators and the nobility, stealing from the great houses right beneath the Lord Ruler's nose.
Yes, I know, Ellen said. I wish I could meet one of them.
to ask them how they hide so well. They must be fascinating people.
Finn almost spoke further, but she held her tongue.
I've probably said too much already.
Elland looked over at her.
You're fascinating too, Valette. I should have known better than to assume you'd been corrupted by the rest of them. Perhaps you'll be able to corrupt them instead.
Vin smiled.
But, Elland said, rising, I need to be leaving. I actually came to the party tonight for a specific purpose. Some friends of mine are meeting together.
That's right, Vin thought. One of the men Elland met with before, the ones that Kelsier and Sazed thought it was strange that he would associate with, was a Hasting.
Vin stood as well, handing Elland back his handkerchief. He didn't take it.
You might want to keep that. It wasn't intended to be simply functional.
Vin looked down at the handkerchief. When a nobleman wants to court a lady seriously, he gives her a handkerchief.
Oh,
she said, pulling the handkerchief back.
Thank you.
Elland smiled, stepping close to her.
That other man, whoever he is, might have a lead on me because of my foolishness. However, I am not so foolish that I would pass up the chance to give him a little competition.
He winked, bowed slightly, and walked back toward the central ballroom. Vin waited a moment, then walked forward and slipped through the balcony doorway. Elland met up with the same two as before, a Li Cal and a Hasting, political enemies of the venture. They paused for a moment, then all three walked toward a stairwell at the side of the room.
Those stairwells only lead one place, Vin thought, slipping back into the room. The auxiliary towers. Mistress Valette?
Vin jumped, turning to find Sazed approaching.
Are we ready to go? He asked.
Vin moved over to him quickly.
Lord Elland Venture just disappeared down that stairwell with his Hasting and Li Cal friends. Interesting, Sazed said. And why would... Mistress, what happened to your makeup? Never mind, Vin said. I think I should follow them. Is that another handkerchief, mistress? Sazed asked. You have been busy. Sazed, are you listening to me? Yes, mistress. I suppose you could follow them if you wish, but you would be fairly obvious. I don't know that it would be the best method of gaining information. I wouldn't follow them overtly, Vin said quietly. I'd use allomancy. But I need your permission for that.
Sazed paused.
I see. How is your sight? It's been healed for ages, Vin said. I don't even notice it anymore.
Sazed sighed.
Very well. Master Kelsier intended to begin your training in earnest again when he returned anyway. Just be careful. This is a ridiculous thing to say to a Mistborn, I think, but I ask anyway. I will, Vin said. I'll meet you on that balcony over there in an hour. Good luck, mistress, Sazed said.
Vin was already rushing back toward the balcony. She stepped around the corner, then stood before the stone railing and the mists beyond. The beautiful swirling void.
It's been far too long, she thought, reaching into her sleeve and pulling out a vial of metals.
She downed it eagerly and got out a small handful of coins. Then, blissfully, she hopped up onto the railing and threw herself out into the dark mists. Tin gave her sight as the wind flapped at her dress. Pewter gave her strength as she turned her eyes toward the buttress-like wall running between the tower and the main keep. Steel gave her power as she threw a coin downward, sending it into the darkness. She lurched in the air. The air resistance fluttered her dress, and she felt like she was trying to pull a bale of cloth behind her, but her allomancy was strong enough to deal with that. Ellen's tower was the next one over. She needed to get onto the wall-top walkway that ran between it and the central tower. Vin flared steel, pushing herself up a bit higher, then flung another coin into the mists behind her. When it hit the wall, she used it to shoot herself forward. She slammed into her target wall just a bit too low, folds of cloth cushioning the blow, but she managed to grab the lip of the walkway above. An unenhanced Vin would have had trouble pulling herself up onto the wall, but Vin the Allomancer easily scrambled over the side. She crouched in her black dress, moving quietly across the wall-top pathway. There were no guards, but the tower ahead of her had a lit sentry post at its base.
"Can't go that way," she thought, glancing upward instead.
The tower appeared to have several rooms, and a couple of them were lit. Vin dropped a coin and catapulted herself upward, then pulled against a window mounting and yanked herself over to land lightly on the stone window ledge. The shutters were closed against the night, and she had to lean close, flaring tin, to hear what was going on inside.
"Balls always last well into the night. We'll probably have to pull double duty."
"Guards," Vin thought, jumping and pushing against the top of the window. It rattled as she shot up the side of the tower. She caught the base of the next window ledge and pulled herself up.
"Don't regret my tardiness,"
a familiar voice said from inside. Elland.
"She happens to be far more attractive than you are, Teldon."
A masculine voice laughed.
"The mighty Elland Venture, finally captured by a pretty face."
"She's more than that, Jastes," Elland said. "She's kind-hearted. She helped Scar runaways on her plantation. I think we should bring her in to talk with us."
"Not a chance," said a deep-voiced man. "Look, Elland, I don't mind if you want to talk philosophy. Hell, I'll even share a few drinks with you when you do. But I'm not going to let random people come join us."
"I agree, Teldon," Jastes said. "Five people is enough."
"See now," Elland's voice said. "I don't think you're being fair."
"Elland," another voice said sufferingly.
"All right," Elland said. "Teldon, did you read the book I gave you?"
"I tried," Teldon said. "It's a bit thick."
"But it's good, right?" Elland said.
"Good enough," Teldon said. "I can see why the Lord Ruler hates it so much."
"Radalovin's works are better," Jastes said. "More concise."
"I don't mean to be contrary," said a fifth voice, "but is this all we're going to do? Read?"
"What's wrong with reading?" Elland asked.
"It's a bit boring," the fifth voice said.
"Good man," Vin thought.
"Boring?" Elland asked.
"Gentlemen, these ideas, these words, they're everything. These men knew that they'd be executed for their words. Can you not sense their passion?"
"Passion, yes," the fifth voice said. "Usefulness, no."
"We can change the world," Jastes said. "Two of us are house heirs, the other three are second heirs."
"Someday, we'll be the ones in charge," Elland said. "If we put these ideas in effect, fairness, diplomacy, moderation, we can exert pressure even on the Lord Ruler."
The fifth voice snorted.
"You might be heir to a powerful house, Elland, but the rest of us aren't as important. Teldon and Jastes will probably never inherit, and Cavoo, no offense, is hardly that influential. We can't change the world."
"We can change the way our houses work," Elland said. "If the houses would stop squabbling, we might be able to gain some real power in the government, rather than just bow to the whims of the Lord Ruler."
"Every year the nobility grows weaker," Jastes said in agreement. "Our ska belong to the Lord Ruler as does our land. His obligators determine who we can marry and what we can believe. Our canals, even, are officially his property. Ministry assassins kill men who speak out too openly, or who are too successful. This is no way to live."
"I agree with you there," Teldon said. "Elland's prattling about class imbalance seems like silliness to me, but I can see the importance of presenting a unified front before the Lord Ruler."
"Exactly," Elland said. "This is what we have to..."
"Vin," a voice whispered.
Vin jumped, nearly falling off the window ledge in shock. She glanced around in alarm.
"Above you,"
the voice whispered. She glanced up. Kelsier hung from another window ledge just above. He smiled, winked, then nodded down toward the wall walkway below. Vin glanced back at Ellen's room as Kelsier dropped through the mists beside her. Finally, she pushed herself off and followed Kelsier down, using her same coin to slow her descent.
"You're back," she said eagerly as she landed.
"Got back this afternoon."
"What are you doing here?"
"Checking up on our friend in there," Kelsier said. "Doesn't seem like much has changed since the last time."
"Last time?"
Kelsier nodded.
"I've spied on that little group a couple of times since you told me about them. I shouldn't have bothered. They're not a threat. Just a bunch of noblings getting together to drink and debate."
"But they want to overthrow the Lord Ruler."
"Hardly," Kelsier said with a snort. "They're just doing what noblemen do, planning alliances. It's not that unusual for the next generation to start organizing their house coalitions before they come to power."
"This is different," Vin said.
"Oh?" Kelsier asked with amusement. "You've been a noble so long that you can tell that already?"
She flushed, and he laughed, putting a friendly arm around her shoulders.
"Oh, don't get like that. They seem like nice enough lads for noblemen. I promise not to kill any of them, all right?"
Vin nodded.
"Perhaps we can find a way to use them. They do seem more open-minded than most. I just don't want you to be disappointed, Vin. They're still noblemen. Perhaps they can't help what they are, but that doesn't change their nature."
"Just like Doxen," Vin thought. "Kelsier assumes the worst about Elend."
But did she really have any reason to expect otherwise? To fight a battle like Kelsier and Doxen were, it was probably more effective and better for the psyche to assume that all of their enemies were evil.
"What happened to your makeup, by the way?" Kelsier asked.
"I don't want to talk about it," Vin said, thinking back to her conversation with Elend. "Why did I have to cry? I'm such an idiot. And the way I blurted out that question about him sleeping with Ska."
Kelsier shrugged.
"Okay, then. We should get going. I doubt young Venture and his comrades will discuss anything relevant."
Vin paused.
"I've listened to them on 3 separate occasions, Vin," Kelsier said. "I'll summarize for you if you want."
"All right," she said with a sigh. "But I told Sazed I'd meet him back up at the party."
"Off you go, then," Kelsier said.
"I promised not to tell him you were sneaking around and using allomancy."
"He told me I could," Vin said defensively.
"He did?"
Vin nodded.
"My mistake," Kelsier said. "You should probably have Saze fetch you a cloak before you leave the party. You've got ash all over the front of your dress." "I'll meet you back at Klubbs's shop. Have the carriage drop you and Sazed off there, then continue on out of the city. That'll keep up appearances."
Vin nodded again, and Kelsier winked and jumped off the wall into the mists. In the end, I must trust in myself. I have seen men who have beaten from themselves the ability to recognize truth and goodness, and I do not think I am one of them. I can still see the tears in a young child's eyes and feel pain at his suffering. If I ever lose this, then I will know that I've passed beyond hope of redemption.
24. Kelsier was already at the shop when Vin and Sazed arrived. He sat with Ham, Klubbs, and Spook in the kitchen, enjoying a late-night drink.
"Ham," Vin said eagerly as she came in the back door. "You're back."
"Yup,"
he said happily, raising his cup.
"It seems like you've been gone forever."
"You're telling me,"
Ham said, his voice earnest. Kelsier chuckled, rising to refill his drink.
"Ham's a bit tired of playing general." "I had to wear a uniform," Ham complained, stretching.
He now wore his customary vest and trousers.
"Even plantation Scott don't have to deal with that kind of torture."
"Try wearing a formal gown sometime," Vin said, seating herself.
She'd brushed off the front of her dress, and it didn't look half as bad as she'd feared. The blackish-gray ash still showed up a bit against the dark fabric, and the fibers were rough where she'd rubbed against stone, but both were barely noticeable. Ham laughed.
"It seems that you've turned into a proper young lady while I was gone."
"Hardly,"
Vin said as Kelsier handed her a cup of wine. She paused briefly, then took a sip.
"Mistress Vin is being modest, Master Hammond," Sazed said, taking a seat. "She's growing quite proficient at courtly arts. Better than many actual nobles that I have known."
Vin flushed, and Ham laughed again.
"Humility, Vin? Where'd you ever learn a bad habit like that?"
"Not from me, certainly," Kelsier said, offering Sazed a cup of wine. The terraceman raised his hand in a respectful refusal.
"Of course she didn't get it from you, Kel," Ham said. "Maybe Spook taught her. He seems to be the only one in this crew who knows how to keep his mouth shut, eh, kid?"
Spook flushed, obviously trying to avoid looking at Vin.
"I'll have to deal with him sometime," she thought. "But not tonight. Kelsier's back and Ellen's not a murderer. This is a night to relax."
Footsteps sounded on the stairs, and a moment later Dachshund strolled into the room.
"A party? And no one sent for me?"
"You seemed busy," Kelsier said.
"Besides," Ham added, "we know you're too responsible to sit around and get drunk with a bunch of miscreants like us."
"Someone has to keep this new crew running," Dachshund said lightheartedly, pouring himself a drink.
He paused, frowning at Ham.
"That vest looks familiar,"
Ham smiled.
"I ripped the arms off of my uniform coat."
"You didn't," Vin said with a smile.
Ham nodded, looking self-satisfied. Dachshund sighed, continuing to fill his cup.
"Ham, those things cost money."
"Everything costs money," Ham said. "But what is money? A physical representation of the abstract concept of effort. Well, wearing that uniform for so long was a pretty mean effort. I'd say that this vest and I are even now."
Dachshund just rolled his eyes. In the main room, the shop's front door opened and closed, and Vin heard Breeze bid hello to the apprentice on watch. "By the way, Dox," Kelsier said, leaning with his back against a cupboard, "I'm going to need a few physical representations of the concept of effort myself. I'd like to rent a small warehouse to conduct some of my informant meetings."
"That can probably be arranged," Dachshund said. "Assuming we keep Vin's wardrobe budget under control, I..."
He broke off, glancing at Vin.
"What did you do to that gown, young lady?"
Vin flushed, scrunching down in her chair.
"Perhaps it's a bit more noticeable than I thought."
Kelsier chuckled.
"You may have to get used to dirtied clothing, Dox. Vin's back on Mistborn duty as of this evening."
"Interesting," Breeze said, entering the kitchen. "Might I suggest that she avoid fighting 3 steel inquisitors at once this time?"
"I'll do my best," Vin said.
Breeze strolled over to the table and chose a seat with his characteristic decorum. The portly man raised his dueling cane, pointing it at Ham.
"I see that my period of intellectual respite has come to an end."
Ham smiled.
"I thought up a couple beastly questions while I was gone, and I've been saving them just for you, Breeze."
"I'm dying of anticipation," Breeze said.
He turned his cane toward Lestibornis.
"Spook, drink."
Spook rushed over and fetched Breeze a cup of wine.
"He's such a fine lad," Breeze noted, accepting the drink. "I barely even have to nudge him allomantically. If only the rest of you ruffians were so accommodating."
Spook frowned.
"Nicing the knot on the playing without."
"I have no idea what you just said, child," Breeze said, "so I'm simply going to pretend it was coherent, then move on."
Kelsier rolled his eyes.
"Losing the stress on the nip," he said. "Nodding without the needing of care."
"Riding the rile of the ridge to the right,"
Spook said with a nod.
"What are you two babbling about?" Breeze said testily.
"Wasing the was of brightness," Spook said. "Nipped the having of wishing of this."
"Ever wasing the doing of this," Kelsier agreed. "Ever wasing the wish of having the have," Ham added with a smile. "Brighting the wish of wasing the not."
Breeze turned to Dachshund with exasperation.
"I believe our companions have finally lost their minds, dear friend."
Dachshund shrugged. Then with a perfectly straight face, he said,
Wuzzing not of Wuzzing is.
Breeze sat dumbfounded, and the room burst into laughter. Breeze rolled his eyes indignantly, shaking his head and muttering about the crew's gross childishness. Vin nearly choked on her wine as she laughed.
"What did you even say?" she asked of Doxson, as he sat down beside her.
"I'm not sure," he confessed. "It just sounded right."
"I don't think you said anything, Docs," Kelsier said.
"Oh, he said something," Spook said. "It just didn't mean anything."
Kelsier laughed.
"That's true pretty much all the time. I found you can ignore half of what Docs tells you and not miss much, except for maybe the occasional complaint that you're spending too much."
"Hey," Doxson said. "Once again, must I point out that someone has to be responsible?" "Honestly, the way you people go through boxings."
Vin smiled. Even Doxson's complaints seemed good-natured. Clubs sat quietly by the sidewall, looking as curmudgeonly as ever, but Vin caught sight of a slight smile on his lips. Kelsier rose and opened another bottle of wine, refilling cups as he told the crew about the Ska Army's preparations. Vin felt contented. As she sipped at her wine, she caught sight of the open doorway leading into the darkened workshop. She imagined, just for a moment, that she could see a figure out in the shadows, a frightened wisp of a girl, untrusting, suspicious. The girl's hair was ragged and short, and she wore a simple, untucked, dirty shirt and a pair of brown trousers. Ben remembered that second night in Clubs's shop, when she had stood out in the dark workroom, watching the others share late-night conversation. Had she really been that girl? One who would hide in the cold darkness, watching the laughter and friendship with a hidden envy, but never daring to join it? Kelsier made some particularly witty comment, drawing laughter from the entire room.
"You're right, Kelsier," Vin thought with a smile. "This is better."
She wasn't like them yet, not completely. 6 months couldn't silence Reen's whispers, and she couldn't see herself ever being as trusting as Kelsier was. But she could finally understand, at least a little bit, why he worked the way he did.
"All right," Kelsier said, pulling over a chair and sitting on it the wrong way. "It looks like the army will be ready on schedule, and Marsh is in place. We need to get this plan moving. Vin, news from the ball?"
"House Tikiol is vulnerable," she said. "Its allies are scattering, and the vultures are moving in. Some whisper that debts and lost business will force the Tikiol to sell off their keep by the end of the month. There's no way they can afford to continue paying the Lord Ruler's keep tax."
"Which effectively eliminates one entire great house from the city," Doxson said. "Most of the Tikiol nobility, including Mistings and Mistborn, will have to move to outer plantations to try and recoup losses."
"Nice," Ham noted. Any noble houses they could frighten out of the city would make seizing it that much easier.
"That still leaves 9 great houses in the city," Breeze noted.
"But they've started killing each other at night," Kelsier said. "That's only one step away from open war. I suspect we'll see an exodus start here pretty soon. Anyone who isn't willing to risk assassination to maintain dominance in Luthadel will leave town for a couple of years."
"The strong houses don't seem very afraid, though," Vin said. "They're still throwing balls, anyway."
"Oh, they'll keep doing that right up until the end," Kelsier said. "Balls make great excuses to meet with allies and keep an eye on enemies. House wars are primarily political, and so they demand political battlefields."
Vin nodded.
"Ham," Kelsier said, "we need to keep an eye on the Luthadel garrison. You're still planning to visit your soldier contacts tomorrow?" Ham nodded.
"I can't promise anything, but I should be able to re-establish some connections. Give me a bit of time and I'll find out what the military is up to."
"Good," Kelsier said.
"I'd like to go with him," Vin said.
Kelsier paused.
"With Ham?"
Vin nodded.
"I haven't trained with a thug yet. Ham could probably show me a few things."
"You already know how to burn pewter," Kelsier said,
We've practiced that.
I know, Vin said.
How could she explain? Ham had practiced with Pewter exclusively. He was bound to be better at it than Kelsier.
Oh, stop pestering the child, Breeze said. She's probably just tired of balls and parties. Let her go be a normal street urchin again for a bit.
Fine, Kelsier said, rolling his eyes. He poured himself another drink.
Breeze, how well could your soothers manage if you were gone for a little while?
Breeze shrugged.
I am, of course, the most effective member of the team, but I did train the others. They'll recruit effectively without me, especially now that stories about the survivor are getting so popular.
We need to talk about that, by the way, Kel, Doxson said, frowning. I'm not sure if I like all this mysticism about you and the 11th metal.
We can discuss it later, Kelsier said.
Why ask about my men? Breeze said. Have you finally grown so jealous of my impeccable fashion sense that you've decided to have me disposed of?
You might say that, Kelsier said. I was thinking of sending you to replace Yeadon in a few months.
Replace Yeadon? Breeze asked with surprise. You mean for me to lead the army?
Why not? Kelsier asked. You're great at giving orders.
From the background, my dear man, Breeze said. I don't stand out in front. Why, I'd be a general. Do you have any idea how ludicrous that sounds?
Just consider it, Kelsier said. Our recruitment should be mostly done by then, so you might be most effective if you were to go to the caves and let Yeadon come back to prepare his contacts here. Breeze frowned.
I suppose.
Regardless, Kelsier said, rising, I don't think I've had nearly enough wine. Spook, be a good lad and run down to the cellar for another bottle, eh? The boy nodded, and the conversation turned back to lighter topics. Vin settled back in her chair, feeling the warmth of the coal stove at the side of the room, content for the moment to simply enjoy the peace of not having to worry, fight, or plan.
If only Rhene could have known something like this, she thought, idly fingering her earring. Perhaps then things would have been different for him. For us.
Ham and Vin left the next day to visit the Luthadel garrison. After so many months of playing a noblewoman, Vin had thought that it would feel strange to wear street clothing again. Yet it really didn't. True, it was a bit different. She didn't have to worry about sitting properly or walking so that her dress didn't brush against dirty walls or floors. Yet the mundane clothing still felt natural to her. She wore a simple pair of brown trousers and a loose white shirt tucked in at the waist, then overlaid by a leather vest. Her still lengthening hair was pulled up under a cap. Casual passers might think her a boy, though Ham didn't seem to think it mattered. And it really didn't. Vin had grown accustomed to having people study and evaluate her, but no one on the street even bothered to give her a glance. Shuffling ska workers, unconcerned low noblemen, even high-placed ska-like clubs, they all ignored her.
I'd almost forgotten what it was like to be invisible, Vin thought.
Fortunately, the old attitudes, looking down when she walked, stepping out of people's way, slouching to make herself inconspicuous, returned to her easily. Becoming Vin the street ska felt as simple as remembering an old familiar melody she used to hum.
This really is just another disguise, Vin thought as she walked beside Ham. My makeup is a light coat of ash, carefully rubbed on my cheeks. My gown is a pair of trousers, rubbed to make them seem old and well used.
Who then was she really? Vin the urchin? Valette the lady? Neither? Did any of her friends really know her? Did she even really know herself?
Ah, I've missed this place, Ham said, walking happily beside her.
Ham always seemed happy. She couldn't imagine him dissatisfied, despite what he'd said about his time leading the army.
It's kind of strange, he said, turning to Vin.
He didn't walk with the same careful air of despondence that Vin had cultivated. He didn't even seem to care that he stood out from other ska.
I probably shouldn't miss this place,
I mean, Luthadel is the dirtiest, most crowded city in the Final Empire. But there's also something about it.
Is this where your family lives? Vin asked.
Ham shook his head.
They live in a smaller city outside of town. My wife is a seamstress there. She tells people I'm in the Luthadel garrison.
Don't you miss them?
Of course I do, Ham said. It's hard. I only get to spend a few months at a time with them. But it's better this way. If I were to get killed on a job, the Inquisitors would have a tough time tracking my family. I haven't even told Kel which city they live in.
You think the Ministry would go to that much trouble? Vin asked. I mean, you'd already be dead.
I'm a Misting, Vin. That means that all of my descendants will have some noble blood. My children might turn out to be Allomancers, as might their children. No. When the Inquisitors kill a Misting, they make certain to wipe out his children, too. The only way to keep my family safe is to stay away from them.
You could just not use your Allomancy, Vin said.
Ham shook his head.
I don't know if I could do that.
Because of the power?
No, because of the money, Ham said frankly. Thugs, or pewter arms as the nobility prefer to call them, are the most sought-after Mistings. A competent thug can stand against a half-dozen regular men, and he can lift more, endure more, and move faster than any other hired muscle. Those things mean a lot when you have to keep your crews small. Mix a couple of coin shots with five or so thugs, and you've got yourself a small mobile army. Men will pay a lot for protection like that.
Vin nodded.
I can see how the money would be tempting.
It's more than tempting, Vin. My family doesn't have to live in packed ska tenements, nor do they have to worry about starving. My wife only works to keep up appearances. They have a good life for ska. Once I have enough, we'll move away from the central dominance. There are places in the Final Empire that a lot of people don't know about. Places where a man with enough money can live the life of a nobleman. Places where you can stop worrying and just live.
That sounds appealing.
Ham nodded, turning and leading them down a larger thoroughfare toward the main city gates.
I got the dream from Kel, actually. That's what he always said he wanted to do. I just hope I have more luck than he did.
Vin frowned.
Everyone says he was rich. Why didn't he leave?
I don't know, Ham said. There was always another job, each one bigger than the last. I guess when you're a crew leader like him, the game can get addicting. Soon money didn't even seem to matter to him. Eventually he heard that the Lord Ruler was storing some incalculable secret in that hidden sanctum of his. If he and Mare had walked away before that job... But, well, they didn't. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have been happy living lives where they didn't have to worry.
The concept seemed to intrigue him, and Vin could see another of his questions working within his mind.
I guess when you're a crew leader like him, the game can get addicting.
Her earlier apprehensions returned. What would happen if Kelsier seized the Imperial throne for himself? He couldn't possibly be as bad as the Lord Ruler, but... She was reading more and more of the logbook. The Lord Ruler hadn't always been a tyrant. He'd been a good man once, a good man whose life had gone wrong.
Kelsier's different, Vin told herself forcefully. He'll do the right thing.
Still, she wondered. Ham might not understand, but Vin could see the enticement. Despite noble depravity, there was something intoxicating about high society. Vin was captivated by the beauty, the music, and the dancing. Her fascination wasn't the same as Kelsier's. She wasn't as interested in political games, or even scams. But she could understand why he would have been reluctant to leave Luthadel behind. That reluctance had destroyed the old Kelsier. But it had produced something better, a more determined, less self-serving Kelsier. Hopefully.
Of course his plans before also cost him the woman he loved. Is that why he hates the nobility so much?
Ham, she asked,
Has Kelsier always hated the nobility?
Ham nodded.
It's worse now, though.
He frightens me sometimes. It seems like he wants to kill all of them, no matter who they are.
I'm concerned about him, too, Ham said. This 11th metal business. It's almost like he's making himself out to be some kind of holy man.
He paused, then he looked toward her.
Don't worry too much. Breeze, Dox, and I have already talked about this. We're going to confront Kel, see if we can rein him in a bit. He means well, but he has a tendency to go a little overboard sometimes.
Vin nodded.
Ahead, the customary crowded lines of people waited for permission to pass through the city gates. She and Ham walked quietly past the solemn group, workers being sent out to the docks, men off to work one of the outer mills alongside the river or lake, lesser noblemen wishing to travel. All had to have a good reason to leave the city. The Lord Ruler strictly controlled travel inside his realm.
Poor things, Vin thought as she passed a ragged band of children carrying pails and brushes, probably on duty to climb the wall and scrub mist-grown lichen off the parapets.
Ahead, up near the gates, an official cursed and shoved a man out of line. The ska worker fell hard, but eventually picked himself back up and shuffled to the end of the line. It was likely that if he wasn't let out of the city, he wouldn't be able to do his day's work. And no work meant no food tokens for his family. Vin followed Ham past the gates, heading down a street parallel to the city wall, at the end of which Vin could see a large building complex. Vin had never studied the garrison headquarters before. Most crew members tended to stay a good distance away from it. However, as they approached, she was impressed by its defensive appearance. Large spikes were mounted on the wall that ran around the entire complex. The buildings within were bulky and fortified. Soldiers stood at the gates, eyeing passers-by with hostility. Vin paused.
Ham, how are we going to get in there?
Don't worry, he said, stopping beside her. I'm known to the garrison. Besides, it's not as bad as it looks. The garrison members just put on an intimidating face. As you can imagine, they aren't very well liked. Most of the soldiers in there are ska, men who have, in exchange for a better life, sold out to the Lord Ruler. Whenever there are ska riots in a city, the local garrison is usually hit pretty hard by malcontents, hence the fortifications.
So you know these men?
Ham nodded.
I'm not like Breeze or Kelvin. I can't put on faces and pretend. I'm just who I am. Those soldiers don't know I'm a Misting, but they know I work in the underground. I've known many of these guys for years. They've consistently tried to recruit me. They generally have better luck getting people like me, who are already outside mainstream society, to join their ranks.
But you're going to betray them, Vin said quietly, pulling Ham to the side of the road.
Betray? He asked. No, it won't be a betrayal. Those men are mercenaries, Vin. They've been hired to fight, and they'll attack friends, even relatives, in a riot or rebellion. Soldiers learn to understand these kinds of things. We may be friends, but when it comes to fighting, none of us would hesitate to kill the others.
Vin nodded slowly.
It seemed harsh. But that's what life is. Harsh. That part of Reen's teaching wasn't a lie.
Poor lads, Ham said, looking at the garrison. We could have used men like them. Before I left for the caves, I managed to recruit the few that I thought would be receptive. The rest, well, they picked their path. Like me, they're just trying to give their kids a better life. The difference is they're willing to work for him in order to do it.
Ham turned back to her.
All right, you wanted some tips on burning pewter?
Ben nodded eagerly.
The soldiers usually let me spar with them, Ham said. You can watch me fight. Burn bronze to see when I'm using allomancy. The first, most important thing you'll learn about pewter arming is when to use your metal. I've noticed that young allomancers tend to always flare their pewter, thinking that the stronger they are, the better. However, you don't always want to hit as hard as you can with each blow. Strength is a big part of fighting, but it's not the only part. If you always hit your hardest, you'll tire faster, and you'll give your opponent information about your limitations. A smart man hits his hardest at the end of the battle, when his opponent is weakest. And in an extended battle, like a war, the smart soldier is the one who survives the longest. He'll be the man who paces himself. Vin nodded.
But don't you tire slower when you're using allomancy?
Yes, Ham said. In fact, a man with enough pewter can keep fighting at near-peak efficiency for hours. But pewter dragging like that takes practice, and you'll run out of metals eventually. When you do, the fatigue could kill you. Anyway, what I'm trying to explain is that it's usually best to vary your pewter burning. If you use more strength than you need, you could knock yourself off balance. Also, I've seen thugs who rely on their pewter so much that they disregard training and practice. Pewter enhances your physical abilities, but not your innate skill. If you don't know how to use a weapon, or if you aren't practiced at thinking quickly in a fight, you'll lose no matter how strong you are. I'll have to be extra careful with the garrison, since I don't want them to know I'm an allomancer. You'll be surprised at how often that's important. Watch how I use pewter. I won't just flare it for strength. If I stumble, I'll burn it to give me an instant sense of balance. When I dodge, I might burn it to help me duck out of the way a little faster. There are dozens of little tricks you can do if you know when to give yourself a boost. Vin nodded.
Okay, Ham said. Let's go then.
I'll tell the garrisoners that you're the daughter of a relative. You look young enough for your age that they won't even think twice. Watch me fight, and we'll talk afterward.
Vin nodded again, and the two of them approached the garrison. Ham waved to one of the guards.
Hey, Bevedon, I've got the day off. Is Certus around?
He's here, Ham, Bevedon said. But I don't know that this is the best day for sparring.
Ham raised an eyebrow.
Oh?
Bevedon shared a glance with one of the other soldiers.
Go fetch the captain, he said to the man.
A few moments later, a busy-looking soldier approached from a side building, waving as soon as he saw Ham. His uniform bore a few extra stripes of color and a few gold-colored bits of metal on the shoulder.
Ham, the newcomer said, stepping through the gate.
Certus, Ham said with a smile, clasping hands with the man. Captain now, eh?
Happened last month, Certus said with a nod.
He paused, then eyed Vin.
She's my niece, Ham said. Good lass.
Certus nodded.
Could we speak alone for a moment, Ham?
Ham shrugged and let himself get pulled to a more secluded place beside the complex gates. Vin's allomancy let her make out what they were saying. What did I ever do without tin?
Look, Ham, Certus said. You won't be able to come spar for a while. The garrison is going to be occupied.
Occupied? Ham asked. How?
I can't say, Certus said. But, well, we could really use a soldier like you right now.
Fighting?
Yeah.
Must be something serious if you're taking the attention of the entire garrison.
Certus grew quiet for a moment, and then he spoke again in a hushed tone, so quiet that Vin had to strain to hear.
A rebellion, Certus whispered. Right here in the central dominance. We just got word. An army of Ska rebels appeared and attacked the whole steppe garrison to the north.
Vin felt a sudden chill.
What?
Ham said.
They must have come from the caves up there, the soldier said. Last word was that the whole steppe fortifications are holding. But, Ham, they're only 1,000 men strong. They need reinforcements desperately, and the Kolos will never get there in time. The Veltru garrison sent 5,000 soldiers, but we're not going to leave it to them. This is apparently a very big force of rebels, and the Lord Ruler gave us permission to go help.
Ham nodded.
So what about it? Certus asked. Real fighting, Ham. Real battle pay. We could really use a man of your skill. I'll make you an officer right off. Give you your own squad. I'll have to think about it, Ham said.
He wasn't good at hiding his emotions, and his surprise sounded suspicious to Vin. Certus, however, didn't appear to notice.
Don't take too long, Certus said. We plan to march out in 2 hours.
I'll do it, Ham said, sounding stunned.
Let me go drop off my niece and get some things. I'll be back before you leave.
Good man, Certus said, and Vin could see him clap Ham on the shoulder.
Our army is exposed, Vin thought in horror. They're not ready. They were supposed to take Luthadel quietly, quickly, not face the garrison straight out. Those men are going to be massacred. What happened?
No man dies by my hand or command except that I wish there had been another way. Still, I kill them. Sometimes I wish that I weren't such a cursed realist.
25. Kelsier tossed another water jug into his pack.
Breeze, make a list of all the hideouts where you and I recruited. Go warn them that the Ministry might soon have prisoners who could give them away.
Breeze nodded, for once refraining from making any witty remarks. Behind him, apprentices scrambled through Clubs's shop, gathering and preparing the supplies that Kelsier had ordered.
Docs, this shop should be secure unless they capture Yeadon. Keep all three of Clubs's tin eyes on watch. If there's trouble, head for the bolt lair.
Doxon nodded in acknowledgement as he hurriedly gave orders to the apprentices. One had already left, bearing a warning to Renu. Kelsier thought that the mansion would be safe, only that one group of barges had left from Feliz, and its men had thought that Renu wasn't in on the plan. Renu wouldn't pull out unless absolutely necessary. His disappearance would require removing both himself and Valette from their carefully prepared positions. Kelsier stuffed a handful of rations into his pack, then swung it onto his back.
"What about me, Kel?" Ham asked.
"You're going back to the garrison, like you promised. That was clever thinking. We need an informant in there."
Ham frowned apprehensively.
"I don't have time to deal with your nerves right now, Ham," Kelsier said. "You don't have to scam, just be yourself and listen."
"I won't turn against the garrison if I go with them," he said. "I'll listen, but I'm not going to attack men who think I'm their ally."
"Fine," Kelsier said curtly, "but I sincerely hope you can find a way not to kill any of our soldiers either." "Sazed!"
"Yes, Master Kelsier."
"How much speed do you have stored up?"
Sazed flushed slightly, glancing at the numerous people scurrying around.
"Perhaps 2-3 hours. It is a very difficult attribute to collect."
"Not long enough," Kelsier said. "I'll go alone. Docs is in charge until I get back."
Kelsier spun, then paused. Vin stood behind him in the same trousers, cap, and shirt she had worn to the garrison. She had a pack like his slung over her shoulder, and she looked up at him defiantly.
"This is going to be a difficult trip, Vin," he said. "You've never done anything like this before."
"That's fine."
Kelsier nodded. He pulled his trunk out from beneath the table, then opened it and poured Vin a small pouch of pewter beads. She accepted it without comment.
"Swallow 5 of those beads."
5?
"For now," Kelsier said. "If you need to take some more, call to me so we can stop running."
"Running?"
the girl asked.
"We're not taking a canal boat?"
Kelsier frowned.
"Why would we need a boat?"
Vin glanced down at the pouch, then grabbed a cup of water and began to swallow beads.
"Make sure you have enough water in that pack," Kelsier said. "Take as much as you can carry."
He left her, walking over to lay a hand on Doxon's shoulder.
"It's about 3 hours before sunset. If we push hard, we can be there by noon tomorrow."
Doxon nodded.
"That might be early enough."
"Maybe," Kelsier thought. "The Veltru garrison is only 3 days' march from Holstep. Even riding all night, a messenger couldn't have gotten to Luthadel in under 2 days. By the time I get to the army..."
Doxon could obviously read the worry in Kelsier's eyes.
"Either way, the army is useless to us now," he said.
"I know," Kelsier said. "This is just about saving those men's lives. I'll get word to you as soon as I can."
Doxon nodded. Kelsier turned, flaring his pewter, his pack suddenly becoming as light as if it had been empty.
"Burn your pewter, Vin. We're leaving."
She nodded, and Kelsier felt a pulsing come from her.
"Flare it," he ordered, pulling two mist cloaks from his trunk and tossing one to her.
He put on the other, then walked forward, throwing open the back door to the kitchen. The red sun was bright overhead. Frantic crew members paused for a moment, turning to watch as Kelsier and Vin left the building. The girl hurried forward to walk at Kelsier's side.
"Ham told me that I should learn to use pewter only when I need it. He said it's better to be subtle."
Kelsier turned to face the girl.
"This is not a time for subtlety. Stay close to me, try to keep up, and make absolutely certain you don't run out of pewter."
Vin nodded, suddenly looking a bit apprehensive.
"All right," Kelsier said, taking a deep breath. "Let's go."
Kelsier took off down the alleyway in a superhuman dash. Vin jumped into motion, following him out of the alley and onto the street. Pewter was a blazing fire within her. Flared as it was, she would probably go through all five beads in barely an hour. Kelsier ignored the traffic, bolting out into the very center of the street, maintaining his ridiculous speed. Vin followed, growing increasingly worried about what she had gotten herself into.
"I can't let him go alone," she thought.
Of course, the last time she'd forced Kelsier to take her with him, she'd ended up half dead in a sickbed for a month. Kelsier wove between carriages, brushing past pedestrians, charging down the street as if it were meant only for him. Vin followed as best she could, the ground a blur beneath her feet, people passing too quickly to see their faces. Some of them called out after her, their voices annoyed. A couple of these, however, choked off immediately, falling silent.
"The cloaks," Vin thought. "That's why we're wearing them. That's why we always wear them. Noblemen who see the mist cloaks will know to stay out of our way."
Kelsier turned, running directly toward the northern city gates. Vin followed. Kelsier didn't slow as he approached the gates, and the lines of people began to point. Checkpoint guards turned with surprised faces. Kelsier jumped. One of the armored guards crumpled to the ground with a cry, smashed down by Kelsier's alomantic weight as the crew leader passed overhead. Vin took a breath, dropped a coin to give herself a bit of a lift, and jumped. She easily cleared a second guard, who looked up with surprise as his companion squirmed on the ground. Vin pushed against the soldier's armor, throwing herself higher into the air. The man staggered, but stayed on his feet. Vin was nowhere near as heavy as Kelsier. She shot over the wall, hearing cries of surprise from the soldiers on top of it. She could only hope that nobody recognized her. It wasn't likely. Though her cap flew free as she soared through the air, those who were familiar with Valette the court-going lady would probably never connect her to a mistborn in dirty trousers. Vin's cloak whipped angrily in the passing air. Kelsier completed his arc before her and began to descend, and Vin soon followed. It felt very strange to use allomancy in the sunlight. Unnatural, even. Vin made the mistake of looking down as she fell. Instead of comfortable swirling mists, she saw the ground far below.
"So high," Vin thought with horror.
Fortunately, she wasn't too disoriented to push against the coin Kelsier had used to land. She slowed her descent to a manageable level before thumping against the ashen earth. Kelsier immediately took off down the highway. Vin followed him, ignoring merchants and travelers. Now that they were out of the city, she had thought Kelsier might slow down. He didn't. He sped up. And suddenly she understood. Kelsier didn't intend to walk or even jog to the caves. He planned to dash all the way there. It was a 2-week trip by canal. How long would it take them? They were moving fast, horribly fast. Slower than a galloping horse, certainly, but surely a horse couldn't maintain such a gallop for very long. Vin didn't feel fatigue as she ran. She relied on the pewter, only passing a little of the strain onto her body. She could barely feel her footsteps hitting the ground beneath her, and with such a large reserve of pewter, she felt that she could maintain the speed for a decent length of time. She caught up to Kelsier, falling into place beside him.
"This is easier than I thought it would be."
"Pewter enhances your balance," Kelsier said. "Otherwise you'd be tripping over yourself by now."
What do you think we'll find? At the caves, I mean.
Kelsier shook his head.
No use talking. Save your strength.
But I'm not feeling weary at all.
We'll see what you say in 16 hours, Kelsier said, speeding up even more as they turned off the highway, running onto the wide towpath beside the Luth-Davin Canal.
16 hours?
Vin fell behind Kelsier slightly, giving herself plenty of space to run. Kelsier increased their speed until they were going at a maddening pace. He was right. In any other context, she would have quickly missed her step on the uneven road. Yet with Pewter and Tin guiding her, she managed to stay on her feet, though doing so required increasing attention as the evening grew dark and the mists came out. Occasionally, Kelsier threw down a coin and launched himself from one hilltop to another. However, he mostly kept them running at an even pace, sticking to the canal. Hours passed, and Vin began to feel the fatigue that he had implied would come. She maintained her speed, but she could feel something underneath it, a resistance within, a longing to stop and rest. Despite Pewter's power, her body was running out of strength. She made certain to never let her Pewter run low. She feared that if it ever went out, the fatigue would come upon her so powerfully that she wouldn't be able to get started again. Kelsier also ordered her to drink a ridiculous amount of water, though she wasn't that thirsty. The night grew dark and silent, no travelers daring to brave the mists. They passed canal boats and barges tied up for the night, as well as the occasional camp of canalmen, their tents huddled closely against the mists. Twice they saw mist wraiths on the road, the first one giving Vin a terrible start. Kelsier just passed it by, completely ignoring the terrible translucent remnants of the people and animals who had been ingested, their bones now forming the mist wraith's own skeleton. Still, he kept running. Time became a blur, and the running came to dominate all that Vin was and did. Moving demanded so much attention that she could barely even focus on Kelsier ahead of her in the mists. She kept putting one foot ahead of the other, her body remaining strong, yet at the same time feeling terribly exhausted. Every step, quick though it was, became a chore. She began to yearn for rest. Kelsier didn't give it to her. He kept running, forcing her on, maintaining the incredible speed. Vin's world became a timeless thing of forced pain and burgeoning enervation. They slowed occasionally to drink water or swallow more pewter beads, but she never stopped running. It was like she couldn't stop. Vin let the exhaustion overwhelm her mind. Flared pewter was everything. She was nothing else. Light surprised her. The sun began to rise, the mists vanishing. But Kelsier didn't let the illumination stop them. How could he? They had to run. They had to just... had to... keep... running.
I'm going to die.
It wasn't the first time the thought had occurred to Vin during the run. In fact, the idea kept circling in her mind, picking at her brain like a carrion bird. She kept moving, running.
I hate running, she thought. That's why I always lived in a city, not out on the countryside, so I wouldn't have to run.
Something within her knew that the thought didn't make any kind of sense. However, lucidity was not currently one of her virtues.
I hate Kelsier, too. He just keeps on going. How long has it been since the sun rose? Minutes? Hours? Weeks? Years? I swear I don't think...
Kelsier slowed to a stop on the road ahead of her.